Episode 114 of the podcast. This week we're talking about, should we let a dog go or push him through? And I think there's middle ground there. So we're going to explore that this week.
You're listening to the Creating Great Grooming Dogs podcast. I'm Chrissy Neumeyer-Smith. I'm a certified professional groomer, a certified behavior consultant for canines, a certified professional dog trainer, and the owner of Happy Critters in Nashua, New Hampshire. And this, my friends and colleagues, is the podcast where grooming and training meet.
Let's start this one with an example. So I was grooming this older dog. He's about like 17, older guy. So super sweet, such a nice little guy. And I went to lift his leg and to get underneath and trim out the armpit. And he turned into a land shark. And it was so dramatic and so very different from what he's normally like that I put his foot down, calmed him down again. But think about it. What do we need to do next? Well, now I'm in first aid mode. Why? The response was so dramatic that to me it indicates pain. Now I have to check his armpit and see if I nicked him. And groomers, we know that this is kind of a dog reacts like that and you got to wonder, like, did I nick you? Do you have a mole or something I couldn't see? Turns out I did not nick him, but the dramatic response was definitely some sort of a discomfort. And it was dramatic. It was over the top. It was full on, like if his teeth were close to me, I'm pretty sure he would have been doing full bites. But now what do I do? Right? Because one school of dog training says, oh, let him go. Let him go. Just release him, which we cannot do. Now we're in first aid mode. Right? Now I need to make sure that this dog is okay. The other school of thought is just make him do it. Just tell him no, strap him down, maybe get another person, right? But this to me was a pain response. He's not a bad dog. He's having a pain response. So I ended up calming him down. So this is the way I approach things. I first try to prevent them from having that little spark of I feel like I need to be dramatic, but calmed him down. Calmed him down in my hands. When I tried to lift the leg again, I was gentle about it. Like, okay, is there something about, you know, your joint? Is it something, you know, just gentle. He wasn't having any of it at first. Calmed him down. Went from the other side. Lifted the other leg and looked from the opposite side. Looked under his belly. You know, put a finger into his armpit to see if there was any blood, right? You have to think about, how can I help this dog be calm, comfortable, and cooperative again? And what changed? That moment was so obvious. In some cases, we don't have an obvious moment where the dog is like, this is the point I cannot handle. But in this case, there was a definite, obvious, this is the point I cannot handle. And this dog had zero ability to cope with that stress. Zero. Zero. Like, I mean, you think about if something hurts, most of us don't lash out with such drama. The normal dog doesn't lash out with that kind of drama just because something hurt, right? So we need to think about teaching dogs so that they can trust us even when it's uncomfortable, even when something might be sore, even when something might get hurt. Otherwise, we end up with a bunch of dogs that owners can't do a medication on, or that we can't, you know, do cleaning around their eyes anymore as they get older because they're like, nope, that's sore now, you know, and then, of course, that's an ever repeating cycle because, you know, the owner that can't clean that gunk out from the corner of the eyes, and then the dog has like a little sore there and won't let the owner clean out the gunk out around the eyes, and that sore is going to stay there forever, you know. We need to think about these dogs need to learn how to cope with us even if it's uncomfortable, even if it's sore. So part of how we build that trust with them is by acknowledging that, like, listen, dude, I get that it's sore. Right? That's some tech talk, right? But think about it. That's part of how we're going to do that. It's like, all right, I'm going to acknowledge that that really scared you. You're sore or something hurt. I don't know what it was. Let's find out. but calm down first. And calm them down first. Don't just go for it. Don't just turn into, you know, the, oh man, freaking doodles and their front legs, you know, like maybe this dog is reacting about a front leg because it's sore. And also be thinking about times when we kind of have it in our head that a breed or a particular dog is a little bit troublesome for us, that they're having a hard time. So if we remember, okay, this dog is having a hard time. For whatever reason, this dog finds this process or this room or this experience to be really difficult. So we need to calm them down. Calm them down. And I know I say it all the time, but think in terms of calm, comfortable, and cooperative, right? But they should be able to handle us doing something that's uncomfortable, right? So we can be emotionally comfortable even if physically we're uncomfortable. And all right, that's kind of a strange thought, right? But be thinking about if we calm them down again and then gently take a look. Gently think about what we would do if it were another person, you know, like, you know, person screams out and you're like, oh wow, you know, well, let's see your hand. Did you break it? You know, we would calm them down. So if we think in terms of calming them down, getting them back to calm, comfortable, cooperative, if they lost it, then we can start to help them trust us when we reapproach, is what I was going to say. I don't know if that's a word. But when we go back and we're like, okay, now I'm in first aid mode. So we can't simply let them go. And it's one of my big peeves, you know, like, oh, never mind, never mind, never mind, never mind. You know, like owners will do that, you know, like, oh, yeah, can you, you know, just check over? Oh, never mind, never mind, never mind. He's not comfortable with that. But we need to work with, okay, well, let's calm him down and help him be comfortable with it. Or let's calm him down and tell him he's off the hook. But we don't let dogs just go away because they freak out. And that's really important. It's the message that gets sent when they get dramatic and we let go is that the drama really worked. Now, I'm saying dramatic because it could be a variety of things. It could be turning into a little shark. It could be full teeth. Or it could be screams, cowering, peeing, you know, like there are lots of ways that a dog can be like, ah, I'm frantic. But I want you to think about, we can't just release in that moment. And I want us to think about calm, comfortable, and cooperative throughout our day and throughout all the things that we do, because if we are watching for it, we have a better chance of seeing a signal before a dog becomes dramatic. So in the case of this little dog, I really think that something startled him and it hurt, right? I don't think he was thinking. I think he was like, doo-doo-doo, staring off into space in the zone while I was drying him, you know? But it was dramatic. And I don't often get that response from dogs because I'm watching for the smaller, more subtle cues and working on at that moment and at that level. So when this, like, total spark of drama, I'm like, whoa, okay. So, did I just nick you? It's the only thing I could think at that moment. Did I just nick you? Did something happen to your leg? But meanwhile, there's someone in the room going, oh, he's old. He's old. You can let him go. You can let him go. He's old. He's old. I'm like, no, I can't let him go. I need to calm him down. Obviously, I need to calm the person in the room down too, but I can't let him go. We're going to calm him down, and then I'm going to see if the clippers nicked his armpit. Like, you have to, sometimes we really have to forget that owners are there, or other people in the room are like, oh my God, the dog screamed, you got to let him go. But in this moment, now I'm in first aid mode, and I need to calm him down, and I need to find a way to check that area to make sure that he's okay. So those dramatic bursts, yeah, I usually think of those as a pain response. And in his case, I did not nick that armpit. But think about it, an older dog, I mean, your armpits are kind of one of those little tricky areas that, you know, if they have a mole on there, I mean, you're picking out a mat. Who knows if you nicked a mole, right? I have to look. and it's not going to be an area that's going to be easy to look at. It's not like we're going to spend 20 minutes teaching him to lie down on his side and put his leg up. 20 minutes, 2 years, whatever the case may be for these like long-term training plans that trainers start thinking up in their heads. And I get it because I'm a trainer too. And it's kind of fun to come up with this big long-term training plan about how we can get a dog to do stuff. But how about in this moment, we calm him down? Because you know what? The rest of the grooming, he was great for me. He didn't have any lingering feeling of, I can't trust her. He was fine. But I also know that he has never, ever, ever been taught how to deal with stress. Because that was way over the top. Way over the top. Right? Would I trust him if he came in with some known sore? You know, like, I don't know. I'm not sure. That might be a dog that you muzzle, you know, or put one of the Elizabethan collars on. So I'm going to be clear here too. So in the grooming world, we call an e-collar. The Elizabethan collars are an e-collar. In the training world, an e-collar is an electronic collar. So just for clarity's sake, when we're speaking to to other professions, be a little bit clearer, electronic collar or Elizabethan collar.
If you're enjoying this podcast, please remember to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes and tell all of your friends.
That might be a dog that, you know, if he came in limping or something, I might be like, okay, he doesn't know how to handle the stress if something hurts him. And he has shown that he is willing to do damage, because I really do think that if I were close enough to his mouth, he would have been sinking his teeth in. He did not have any sense of self-control when he turned around and did that. But it was a dramatic response. And that to me means a pain response. And I couldn't find any sort of a surface nick. I assume it had something to do with the angle I was holding his leg at. But I want you to think about the fact that we can't just let them go. And we can't just make them do it. Right? There's a balance between those two things. There's someplace in the middle. Like, I have to calm him down before I proceed. Right? I can't just be like, oh God, we got him. You get him over there, and somebody hold over here, and like, let's just tie him down, tether him down, and you know, like all the various variety of things that we could do, you know. Next thing you know, he's like strapped in 1,000 different ways, panicking. Like, I don't want panic on my table. No panic on my table. So by backing off a little bit and calming him down, it's not like we're letting him go, right? People are like, oh, just stop. Like, no, I can't just stop, but I can back off. I can back off, readjust, reassess, observe, and think about the animal in front of you. Observe what is happening, right? Reassess what your plan is going to be. How are you going to help them be calm, comfortable, and cooperative again? How can you find out what's going on? Like when I looked from the opposite side, you know, the same person who's like, oh, but he's old. Let him go. It's not important. I'm like, I need to check, you know? And that same person, when I'm looking from the other side, you know, to check what might have happened in the armpit, he was fine for that. They're like, oh, I wouldn't have thought of doing it that way. You know, but I'm trying to help him be calm and address a physical need. This is the part that trainers don't often get, that the dogs have a grooming need. This is part of caring for them. This is part of keeping them healthy. Now we need to help prepare them for a lifetime of this, and they're not always going to feel great about it. They're not always going to be in full health, and they need to know how to trust us when things are sore, and that we're not always going to let go the instant doggy goes, whoa, you know, like we're not just like, oh, never mind, that it doesn't work that way. Now that can be part of early training, and that could be part of getting a dog to a point that they can be fully groomed, right? I respect that that could be part of it, but we also need to build past that. So like when we're initially working with a puppy, we get this little itty bitty baby puppy, right? And they squirm and let out a little yelp. Yeah, you might be like, oh, buddy, I didn't mean to scare you, right? We don't usually just go, oh, he yelped, let him go, put him on the floor again, walk out of the room, you know? We're a little bit more rational about it. We're like, okay, oh, hey, let me calm you down again. I don't want you to be scared. And use that same idea with the adult dogs too. Even if they are a little bit hardened by the world, even if they're a little bit more experienced, like, whoa, I don't want you to be afraid of this. Okay, can we get back to a point where you trust me again? And then if there is something specific that we decide to work on, that's when we can try to work on a system where the dog is doing really well and we totally disengage. Because if you remember, and I know we haven't gone over the four quadrants in a long time, but positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, positive punishment, negative punishment, ending something unpleasant, right? Like that's pleasant. When something unpleasant ends, that can be used for training purposes. And that is the dog is doing something you really like. Maybe it's holding their foot for you while you are grinding, right? And they don't find it pleasant, but they're being really good. And you end while they're really good. And that is negative reinforcement. You are removing the challenge so that the dog will repeat the thing they were doing, right? To reward the thing that they were doing, which in this case was being good, right? So if the dog is being good and you stop dremeling while they're good, you have just used negative reinforcement to build that being good, right? You're rewarding it by removing something unpleasant. Now, if they screech and scream or flail and bite, and we totally remove the challenge, that could also be negative reinforcement for the very thing that we don't want. That could be, you know what? That really worked. She'll give me a break if I scream and bite. I'd rather have them think that really worked. She will give me a break if I'm really calm, right? So when we think about what we are doing, then it becomes kind of clear, like, all right, I can back off a little bit and calm you down again. And maybe I won't go back to the same exact thing I was doing, right? Maybe I'll choose to do something else, go to a different part of your body, or try nail clippers instead of a grinder, or, you know, towel dry your head a little bit more, you know, whatever the case may be. But we can choose to do that with a dog who's calm. We can calm them down again before we totally back off. And the dog doesn't know you backed off. If you're doing it right, the dog has no idea that this wasn't your plan all along. So, you know, we can't just let them go. My main point this week is we can't just like, oh, never mind, and put them on the floor or send them home, you know, like not if we're trying to actually change the behavior. So we need to keep them calm, comfortable, and cooperative, and be watching for the moments when it changes. Sometimes that's dramatic. Sometimes that's slow and gradual. Sometimes that's a long history of you know exactly when it's going to change and you have an opportunity to work on it. But by keeping them calm, comfortable, and cooperative, and ending while they're calm, comfortable, and cooperative, you are building more calm, comfortable, and cooperative, right? So dog training is still happening, even if we don't have cookies, even if we don't have a clicker, even if we aren't like in training mode, we're always learning. They're learning what's going on. And sometimes we phrase that as what they can get away with and what they can't get away with. I don't know. I think that when we word it that way, it's very, it makes it sound like we're arguing with them. Like, we're not arguing with them. I'm just watching what they're doing. You know, like an argument takes two. I'm not going to get into an argument. So I'm just watching what he's doing, observing what he's doing, and helping him be good for what I need to do. So we can't just let him go. And we also can't just push him through it. No, and not care at all about what their brain is doing. Because that is the classic bad experience. That's the dog who decides, I'm not going to get on a table again because bad things happened there, right? It creates more problems than it solves.
If you'd like more information, you can find me at chrissy@happycritters.net, happycrittersdogtraining.com, or you can join the Facebook group, Creating Great Grooming Dogs podcast or the Facebook page, Creating Great Grooming Dogs. I really look forward to hearing from you.